LYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect.
Oh my, I've been waiting so long to wish everybody a happy 2022. This is our first live show this year. We had a crazy illness time last week at KLYT. Largely most of our staff was out, and we're all back and ready to go. So thank you so much for listening today. We're joined today by Mike Halley, the Senior Advisor for Government Relations at the Heritage Foundation. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's exciting to find out a little bit more about the Heritage Foundation. And Mike, I'm going to let you get the ball rolling and tell us about your position, because as soon as somebody says government relations, to me, that is like overwhelming, trying to relate to our government.
Yeah, that's fair. I get that quite a bit in D.C. I think to understand what I do, it's first important to understand what the Heritage Foundation does. So the Heritage Foundation is a not-for-profit educational organization. It's what we call a think tank. It's the biggest conservative group in the country. What does the think tank do? Your viewers and listeners are probably wondering. Our bread and butter of what we do at the Heritage Foundation, we've been doing this since the Reagan era, is we get the smartest, best conservative experts and researchers from across the country. We put them all in one building, and we crank out policy and research that can be used by conservative policymakers, whether that's, on Capitol Hill, your congressmen and senators, or if it's your local state legislators and representatives. In the Trump administration, we work very closely with, the different departments and agencies. So we're a policy creating, basically, factory. And in addition to that, we have all sorts of other things we do. We do a lot of recruiting of young folks across the country, a lot of programming and events. We're constantly on television and the radio like I am now. And so we really try to just get the word out as much as we can and make sure that people both in D.C. and around the country have the best possible research and facts to have their back, because it's an uphill fight versus mainstream media. The conservative story is not getting out. So it's our job to do that. Now, what I do as government relations, it's my job to make sure that our researchers, that information gets to the place it needs to go. And so I do a lot of making sure that our policymakers around the country in Washington, D.C. have the best information to go off of and help them strategize on how to get conservative victories. And I'm able to do that because I spent a long time working on Capitol Hill and also in the Trump administration at the Department of Homeland Security. So I'm kind of the guy who, tries to turn all these great ideas into action. It's an uphill battle. We don't have the Congress right now in conservative hands or the administration. So a lot of this work is, defensive in nature a little bit, and also kind of offensive and poking holes in things the Biden administration is trying to do. One major way we're doing that right now is we are suing the Biden administration over their unconstitutional vaccine mandate. And we're hoping for a victory there, as I'm sure your listeners heard a lot about these arguments that happened over this weekend, where the liberal justices on the court were basically just, making up facts. Like Sonia Sotomayor said, 100,000 kids on ventilators, a completely made up thing. And so we're really hopeful we can win that case. And we're fighting on behalf of not just the Heritage Foundation, where, it'll be a mandate on us, but on conservatives across the country who don't want their government making their medical decisions.
Well, Mike, we're going to talk a little bit more about those vaccine mandates toward the second segment with you today. But I wanted to play off of what you just said. I'm reading your bio, and every time I read about something like this and what you've done, and by the way, thank you for all of your hard work, because as you already mentioned, the media is not giving us an unbiased, objective view of the facts. And really, our listeners can get, obviously there's a conservative bias, but they can get facts from the Heritage Foundation. How can our listeners take advantage of what you publish on your website?
Right. So first thing is follow us on, if you're on social media, Twitter is, we're at Heritage. Our website is heritage.org. If you go on there, there's a variety of of email listservs you can sign up for, and we'll email you the new policy stuff daily almost if you're up for it. But I would just peruse the website a little bit. It breaks it out neatly into all these different policy areas. Say you're having a back and forth with a friend of a liberal, you know, bent, and you find yourself in a position where, hey, I need some ammunition to win this argument. Well, you just go on our website, look into the different categories of issue areas we cover, and it'll get you right there. I think that's the best way to kind of stay on top of it. And you know what? Join the Heritage Foundation. You can become a member for very, very little, and you can communicate with our experts and the different people throughout the country. And, you know, this can be participatory. It's not just us, you know, telling things, saying things and writing things. We want to know what people on the ground are seeing. And so there's opportunities for, you know, to complete that feedback loop. This is about uniting a conservative movement across the country. And that's how we see ourselves, as kind of the convener of all these folks.
You mentioned in your bio that you were the chief legal point of contact for the general counsel, and a 3,000 lawyer office for all congressional oversight. And I told you before the program, I'm thinking about any operation that is employing 3,000 attorneys, this is a massive undertaking. There's so much behind the scenes than what we even hear about in the media going on in politics. Explain some of that and what that oversight looks like.
Sure. So you're right. It's huge. A lot of people don't realize the Department of Homeland Security is the third largest department in the entire federal government. It's absolutely mammoth. After 9/11, they just combined all of these different security-related agencies under one roof in the Department of Homeland Security. And so you have not just DHS formally, but also Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the Transportation Security Administration, Coast Guard, et cetera, all these different components. So what I did at the Department of Homeland Security is based on my background, where I was on Capitol Hill as an investigative attorney, basically working with Congress to get information out of the Biden administration. I joined the Trump administration to lead up how they would respond to congressional investigations and inquiry, and in doing so managed, you know, a lot of lawyers across the country at all these different departments and agencies. A lot of people might be wondering what congressional oversight even is. I frankly had no idea until I was in law school in one summer, saw an interesting job opening on Capitol Hill doing just that. And, you know, before that, I wasn't sure what it was. But I learned very quickly. You might remember the Fast and Furious scandal, the Benghazi debacle, the Secret Service, when there was all sorts of, you know, security missteps in the Obama administration, you know, including that Cartagena incident where a bunch of agents went out and partied all night before Obama got there. Things like that I cut my teeth on in terms of the art of investigative work. And so it is this little known kind of thing that Congress can do. We're familiar with Congress is where the bills, you know, become law. Their job is primarily legislative, but they also have this function of oversight where they're able to compel the government to hand over information. And so this is this huge area of potential activity. Frankly, that's what we're seeing a lot of by the Democrats on Capitol Hill now. What's happening in terms of the January 6th committee is an oversight function. They're doing oversight in order to potentially inform what they say might be legislation by, you know, calling in all these people and obtaining information. So you see everything that's happening and how aggressive that committee is being. Here's what we want to do at Heritage. We have all of these tools available to Congress to compel the government and other individuals to turn over information. We need to make sure our legislators are using that against the Biden administration. It is not time to be on defense anymore. We need to talk about going on offense, because the media usually performs a function of figuring out, you know, scandals and stories from the Biden administration. But we know for a fact they're not going to do that. They are an extension of the Biden administration. So we need to be our own investigators and oversight demanders. And so what I lead up at Heritage is our project on congressional oversight. And this is where I think your viewers would be really interested. We need to get all the information about things going on around the country, and we need to push it towards Capitol Hill. So if you are coming across a incident in your immediate area of geography, or you have a friend who works in the federal government, or somebody who's being harmed by the government, we need to turn that information into actionable things that our legislators and Congress can do. And that's what we aim at Heritage to do. We supplement these things by aggressive litigation on the Freedom of Information Act, where we will go and ask the federal government to turn over information. If they don't, we'll sue them. And all of this is a way to push, you know, to get the facts out there and show the people in this country what this administration is really doing. And if you look at all of these scandals, whether it's the border that's being overrun and it was opened completely on purpose, we need to know more about that. We need to know why they did it. Were they warned? I think the answer to that is yes, they knew exactly what would happen if they undid all the Trump policies, and they did it anyways. That's a huge thing. We need to know more about the extent of the Biden family's corruption, whether it's Hunter Biden or whether it's the fact that, you know, Biden in the interim between being vice president and president became a multimillionaire through speaker fees and all sorts of areas of soft corruption. We need to know how that plays into how he's governing. We need to know about this vaccine mandate rollout, and did they know it was unconstitutional when they were pushing for it? Did they know the adverse effects it would take on employment and the civil liberties of Americans? All of these are areas we need to push, because in the next year, 2022, it's an election year, moving up to an election. There's not going to be a ton of conservative legislation that's able to get through this Congress. So we need to make sure that by day one of 2023, we know what's been going on, and we're able to present a complete picture so the Congress of the United States, hopefully it switches hands, can legislate based off the information that we've uncovered. And so that's what oversight is and how we aim to use that at Heritage. And we want this to be a cooperative effort. Conservatives across the country need to better organize and get this done, because the left kills us at it every time. They have behemoths in the ACLU and Perkins Coie and major law firms, et cetera, that really ran the Trump administration through the ringer on this stuff. And so far, the Biden administration has been unscathed, and we're going to change that.
You know, we have a regular show with a person that you're very familiar with, Attorney Jay Sekulow. He has the ACLJ, and they do a show on our station every day. In fact, that show follows this show at 3 o'clock every day on KLYT here in New Mexico. I know that they have similar kinds of issues that they're talking about, and they frequently refer to the Heritage Foundation and the resources you have available.
Yes, Jay Sekulow is a tremendous conservative lawyer. He's actually representing the Heritage Foundation in our lawsuit in front of the Supreme Court on the vaccine mandate. The ACLJ does a great job of this, and what we want to do is we want to supplement their work. We want to make sure that their work gets as much promotion as possible. And when they find something, we have experts in-house, the best and smartest in the country, to take a look at what they're uncovering and help make sense of it and help point them in, you know, further investigative inquiries. This is a whole conservative movement effort. There are some other groups that do this sort of thing. You know, Judicial Watch, led by Tom Fitton, is a really big example. Stephen Miller with the America First Legal Foundation is doing great work here. We want to use this convening power that I talked about earlier and our status as the biggest group in the country with a nationwide presence to amplify these folks' efforts, because we need to get it done in a unified conservative way and make sure that all of our friends, like, you know, Jay Sekulow, who's doing great work, get the support that they need. And so that's what we're here to do.
Mike, do you see the judicial branch of our government actually, through the various legal means and things that you've talked about taking, and of course you've also mentioned what is happening on the liberal side of politics in our country, and all they did to, you know, as you, I think you used the word, they took the Trump administration through the ringer. Is the judicial branch actually holding the parties and their agendas in check as it was designed to do?
Not really. I mean, the problem is that our judicial branch has largely become a casualty of the partisanization of this country. The judicial branch is supposed to be a independent branch in which judges are meant to call balls and strikes. That's not what has happened. Basically, you can guarantee that by virtue of who, what president appointed which judge, what kind of result you're going to get. And this is nowhere more evident than in kind of the discussion of the vaccine mandate. We saw the Supreme Court, the liberal judges, were extremely defensive and weren't based in law whatsoever when they were talking about the Biden administration's vaccine mandate. They wanted the vaccine mandate to be upheld because they liked the vaccine mandate. It doesn't enter into their calculus whatsoever whether it's legal or judicially defensible. They're just searching for a way to be a partisan, you know, people who can just rubber stamp Biden administration agendas. And so our difficulty is really in that knowing this about the judicial branch, trying to get legal victories with judges who will play by the rules. And that takes a very sophisticated legal strategy in terms of, you know, where you're filing your cases and how you're tailoring your arguments. To date, we haven't seen much in the way of the judicial branch really stymieing the Biden administration. There's a couple examples where they have. You know, one, we can be thankful that they did put it in join, which means pause, the Biden vaccine mandate for the time period. But there's another example, and a lot of people don't know this, but in the farm bill that was passed earlier this last year, they basically, the Biden administration wanted the money that goes out the farm bill to basically go only towards African-American landowners. Basically, think of it as reparations through farm bill payments to African-American farmers. This is clearly unconstitutional. It's clearly on its face racist. And it was such an absurd attempt that a judge actually came in and stopped it. But we're lucky it got stopped in that one instance, and they're certainly trying again in other instances to basically make your race a determinant factor in whether you get government assistance or not. We see this in the terms of the Biden administration's support for race-based treatment for COVID. Certain people have higher priority than others based on the color of their skin. They're going to keep trying to have this racialized policy of the government. And the only thing that can save us at this point is federal judges that will look at the Constitution and say, no, clearly this is unconstitutional. Because if that case went before a liberal judge, they'd say, hey, this is great. We love it. We don't care what the law says. Go forth and conquer.
I'm just in shock by just the scope of everything that's going on and the few cases that seem to be judged according to the law. And just trying to get away with things seems to be antithetical to our very mission to work together and to have our country be unified. The Heritage Foundation Senior Advisor for Government Relations is Mike Howell. He's on the phone with us this afternoon. Heritage.org is the website. I hope as you're listening today and listening to Mike talk about all these resources, you'll go to their website and take a look at what they have to offer. When we come back, there's a spin in the media right now talking about how unemployment is down, lower than it's been in many, many years. But that's actually not the case. And Mike's going to talk to us about some of the facts when we come back. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
The largest investment for a family is their home. For decades, Carlos Griego and the team at Bosque Home Services has been taking care of houses. Now, here is Carlos talking with Jim Williams about some of the most common issues homeowners need to know about.
Carlos, tell us some of the common misconceptions between what maintenance is required on a refrigerated air system versus maybe a swamp cooling system.
A really common misconception with refrigerated air is that you only need to have it maintained every 3 to 4 years. Refrigerated air should be maintained every year. There's a lot of different things that can go wrong with that could be prevented, because 90% of our repairs are lack of maintenance. It's deferred maintenance. It's dirty coils.
Bosque Home Services, online at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200. That's HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200.
Hey, Westside, Pastor Drew here. If you are looking for a small church community plus world-class Bible teaching, I want to invite you to Calvary Church Westside. We're a family-focused Bible teaching church at Coors Montano. Calvary Church Westside, where church is family.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Mike Howell is a senior advisor for government relations at the Heritage Foundation. He's on the phone with us. Mike, fascinating first segment with you, but I was looking at the jobs report and it looks like we're under 4% for unemployment. So all is well in the job sector, it sounds like.
Yeah, I wish this was true. It's just absolutely not. I mean, if we just zoom out real quick and take a look at the economy of the whole, I think this may be perhaps one of Biden's biggest failures, although it's, you know, hard to tell or compare towards what he's done at our border in terms of opening it and the drugs and the crime and the human carnage that follows, or if it's his assaults on religious liberties and freedoms, or if it's his international relations just embarrassing the USA in terms of our Afghanistan withdrawal and just the cowering to China. It's really hard to rank his failures, but the economy is certainly at the top of that list or near it. One needs to look no further than the shelves in their stores that are and the supply chain delays on basic goods and the inflation that is just wrecking American families, and it's just a tax on the middle class and the poor. And all this is because of, you know, the COVID vaccine mandates, the massive federal entitlements in the new programs the Biden administration has rolled out, and just the unchecked federal government spending and the growth of the government sector as opposed to our, you know, free private sector. And it all results in, you know, what we're seeing now is a really lackluster jobs report for December, where it's, you know, unemployment's at 3.9. Which, you know, the Biden administration is trying to spin as being very, very good. But the huge problem is not the lack of available jobs, but the lack of workers. Businesses are struggling to find anyone who can, you know, fill the job. And it's tough to do that when workers don't want to go back to work because, one, Biden has not crushed the virus like he said he was going to do. Two, there's onerous vaccine restrictions and mandates on employees, you know, many of whom do not think it's in their medical best interest and their private decision making to take the vaccine. In addition, you have all of this massive government spending and the welfare programs that go in with this that are encouraging people just not to work. And people are the government arrives at these unemployment figures by looking at a section of people known as, you know, the willing workers. They don't look at the unemployment numbers and look at the people who dropped out of the workforce. And those are the numbers we're seeing really, you know, tick up. People who just aren't looking for a job anymore because it is not worth it for them. And this is all because of just disastrous economic policy by the Biden administration. No one is better off than they were a year ago. It's exactly why they're completely in the tank with every poll. The Biden administration is and Democrat congressmen are resigning in droves because they know they can't win re-election with these terrible economic numbers. It's truly a catastrophe, and it's, you know, really unfortunate that it was enacted in such a partisan way where the harms were entirely predictable, to be frank.
Well, yeah, it's just amazing what's happening in regard to that. And along those same lines, though, you've won some victories in terms of the January 3rd decision. You have the Northern District Court of Texas standing up for the United States Navy SEALs. And so you are winning some of these injunctive actions, aren't you?
Yes, we are. It all culminates, though, in this Supreme Court case. It's, you know, being decided right now. There have been victories along the way, and it's all going to depend what the future looks like as to what the Supreme Court decides, you know, very soon. We should have a decision, you know, within the week. They're obviously the highest court in the land, and so what they say goes. In the event that the Supreme Court upholds the Biden vaccine mandate, you can expect these economic numbers to get far, far worse, because the reality is, whether there's a mandate or not, there's going to be a sizable chunk of the economy who does not view it as their own medical best interest to get the vaccine. There's many people in these categories, you know, people who are trying to have children, who don't understand the side effects of the vaccines long term, are hesitant. Now, we're going to take all these young people who fit into that camp and basically say, you can no longer work in our economy anymore. Who knows how bad it'll get if that becomes the law of the land, and we look at a fully realized economy that cuts out a large chunk just because they don't want to get the vaccine.
Well, I want to go now, Mike, and have you, if you would, offer maybe a challenge or maybe encouragement to the faith community that is largely makes up our audience here at KLYT. How important is it for people in the faith community to be informed and to actually get out and vote?
Oh my gosh, it is absolutely critical. I mean, I don't have to tell your listeners that the Biden administration and the left has the faith community absolutely in their crosshairs. It's some of their first executive actions that they took are a lot in these, you know, areas of social issues that are especially important to the faith community. Look how they're trying to redefine basically the God's basic nature of sex through their transgender radicalism. And this percolates all throughout the federal policymaking, but down to schools and private businesses. And then, you know, even our culture and everything. So I think it is hugely important for the faith community to stay on top of things like that. And one of the best ways to do it is we need to all be communicating with each other. If something's happening in your child's school or in your workplace that you see running afoul of kind of your faith, it's not good enough just to take it and deal with it. You need to take that information and get it out there and make your voice heard. You need to call your legislators, whether it's your local and state or your congressman, and demand that they do what they promised to do, because these are, you know, largely Republican congressmen who ran with the backing of the faith community made a promise that they'd stand up for us. And so we need to hold them to account for that. It needs to be basically their highest priority to protect, you know, our freedom of religion from government infringement. And I think the best way to do that is to make sure we're having our voices heard and we're not letting politicians off the hook when they don't fight for us.
Mike, have you had conversations with people that you would say are on the left and they listen to what you have to say and they agree? Is there something blocking them from working together? And maybe I should ask the same question about the right.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the left and the right both are, you know, comprised of a coalitions with different interests. And you know, people, for example, on the right, you have the faith community, which is really the bread and butter and the engine that drives the conservative movement. But in addition, you have a lot of, you know, people who just believe in libertarian, smaller government type things, or maybe their chief concern are taxes and whatnot. And so there's a competing attention for, you know, the policymakers priorities. And a lot of the faith community isn't as well represented on Capitol Hill and in the highest chambers of power than the moneyed industries are. And so oftentimes when I talk to folks on the right, it's a matter of prioritization. There are many people on the right who aren't as sympathetic to faith-based issues. They view them as socially controversial, and they really want no part in it. So it's a big part of what I do is making sure that those issues are at the forefront. Like I said earlier, these politicians, you can't get elected to basically a Republican seat in a lot of instances unless you are advocating for support of the faith-based community. And so once they get in, we need to hold them to account and make sure they aren't balancing those interests to the disadvantage of the faith-based community. And then on the left, you have is frankly almost uniform amongst the left, their antagonism towards the faith-based community. They view it as the biggest impediment and the most constitutionally protected and troublesome impediment for them to the enactment of what they view as their global, universal, cultural and social vision. You cannot get anywhere in today's left if you were to say something that, you know, advanced basic Christian understanding of marriage or of sex. You couldn't get anywhere. And so, no, we don't make a lot of headway with them. Leftist politicians are fine to basically quote the Bible every now and then, but that's about where it all ends for them. It's basically an act in that regard.
Mike, I'm so interested in all that you have to say, but I'm unfortunately out of time with you. We do have you scheduled again. I don't know if you'll be with us, but somebody from the Heritage Foundation on the 24th again for another half an hour. And I can tell you right now, we're going to need to probably expand this footprint to an hour with you because we have so much to talk about. And I appreciate you taking your time today to share with us.
Thank you very much for having me on. And thank you to your listeners for listening. Come check us out at Heritage. Let us know how we can better help in this fight we have to take our country back.
There you go. Heritage.org. Thank you so much, Mike. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.